Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our battle discussion.
We were just in the
huddle before we went on the air, and I said, "Everybody, are you ready to go on and make radio magic?" And everybody was ready, with the possible exception of David.
No, the possible exception of Alan.
Anyway, you said, "Well,
fired up, ready to go."
And what did you say, David?
I just said I just love being around smart people.
Well,
you meant the audience, right? The listening audience.
Yes,
absolutely.
Them too.
Nicely done, Teresa. Okay. Let me introduce everybody to the panel this morning. We got a good group, as always. Teresa Bourgeois is here, communications consultant, joins us on Wednesdays and many other days, and we're thrilled to have her here today. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Good morning. Happy first full day of spring.
First full day of spring, and we got a nor'easter coming, but hopefully...
it'll be lovely.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. Maybe it'll spare us, but maybe not. Who knows?
Who knows?
The district attorney for the County of Albany, David Soares, is with us. We could not be more thrilled. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Very nice to have you with us. Also, it's now hard because... of the district attorney. It's difficult to look at you and say that you're not a part of the Berkshire Mafia. But anyway, Jen Smith is here. She's from the Berkshire Eagle. She is a reporter. Her beat is education and whatever else they assign her to do.
Pretty much. But it's a great day to start off with you all.
It's wonderful to have you here. Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, sir. How are you? Good. Excellent. You're wearing your Berkshire Eagle hat. That's good. You're in the mood.
Did I do that again?
Yeah. You did.
There must be something. I mean, I swear, I don't even know what hat I'm putting on. And then Jen comes, and she always mentions, thinks I'm doing it because I'm trying to flatter her. But no. No,
I think now you're just living up to our moniker that we've been given about the Berkshire Mafia. Maybe we need to make Berkshire Mafia.
Whenever you have two people from the Berkshires in one room, it's a Berkshire Mafia.
Which is funny because the Berkshires is like the last place to have a mafia type.
You would think of what we consider that to be. Well, good morning, everyone. We welcome you to the conversation as well. All you have to do is write to us. It's panel@wamc.org. We'd love your letters. panel@wamc.org. And we'll be getting to those in good time. So we'll get going here and start talking about what the news of the day is. Well, you've done a good job. Vladimir Putin, congratulations. So the Trump National Security Advisors go in and they say you're gonna talk to Vladimir Putin, and in big bold letters on the top they said do not congratulate him, and they put it in big bold letters. They underlined it. It was in like 83 point type. Do not congratulate him. And the president got on and said, "Congratulations, Vladimir Putin." Now, does that matter? Is that a big deal? I don't know. That's what we're going to talk about this morning. He did not follow specific warnings from his national security advisors Wednesday when he congratulated Russian President Vladimir Putin on his reelection, including a section in his briefing materials in all capital letters stating "do not congratulate," according to officials familiar with the call.
Which he doesn't read.
Trump also chose not to heed talking points from aides, instructing him to condemn the recent poisoning of a former Russian spy in Britain. Forgot that part. Also did not mention anything about the tampering of the elections. Forgot that part. But he did congratulate him, which is what he was not supposed to do. I leave it to the panel to... instead, I will say, he said they want to meet. They're going to have a meeting now. And they want to discuss an arms race.
I think I figured it all out. I think I figured
too.
The communication problem in
all
the
right.
White House.
So we're going to go with David and then Alan.
You can go with the caps, but I think you have to ask him. He doesn't like being told what to do. If they had just asked him.
Yeah, but David, he would have had to read it.
That's
See, that's the problem. We don't think he read the instructions because he never reads his briefings. Because he thinks he knows better. That's part of arrogance.
Well, it's all caps. But they could have added his favorite color. I mean, they could have done some other things. You know, they could have done
attached
some other
it to
things.
A Big Mac, something like that.
Yes,
favorite color, orange.
Right.
Oh boy.
Well, we're off to a flying start. Now, what do you think, Alan?
Well, here's what I think. One and one is two, and two and one is three, and three and one is four. See, the whole thing started over the Russia arrangement with the Trump people. Did they collude? Did the Russians help him? So we have a certain amount of evidence. We have the evidence. Trump gets into office and he can't say enough good things from day one about the Russians. He hopes that they'll go and find all the information about Hillary that they can possibly find and release it. He again and again plays the Russian card. Now, if in fact it's true that the Russians were colluding with Trump, if they were, and that's a big investigation on right now, then you have to assume, right, that that they have stuff on him. This is the Manchurian candidate, I tell you. They have stuff on him, and he has to keep playing their game no matter who in his administration says, don't do it, it's not good for you, these guys are killing people, they're doing this, they're doing that. He can't get away from it because they got him, if that's the case.
Now, let me ask Teresa Bourgeois, as why you believe, why are the national security advisors telling him not to congratulate him, and why is that so dangerous?
Well, I think we just have to listen to what Senator John McCain said.
You're right.
All right, so can I just quote from him?
Please do.
He says, quote, an American president does not lead the free world by congratulating dictators on winning sham elections. And by doing so with Vladimir Putin, President Trump insulted every Russian citizen who was denied the right to vote in a free and fair election. So what the U.S. is supposed to be is, in theory, leader of the free world, is to promote free and fair elections and to denigrate those who do not conduct free and fair elections. But you step back and he's thinking about Vladimir Putin used chemical weapons in the streets of London, an incredibly dangerous chemical weapon in the streets of London, bombing citizens in Syria, killing women and children and destroying cities, you know, disrupting the Ukraine, disrupting our elections. And this is the person that Donald Trump embraces. And a reporter asked a very good question at the briefing yesterday. So you called to congratulate Putin. Well, what about Angela Merkel? When she finally, you know, won her election and the government was settled, did he call the next day or the day after to congratulate her and talk about plans of working together? No. And so, you know, this is why. What are we as a country? What do we hold up to the free, you know, to the rest of the world? What kind of example do we set? When, you know, is he going to invite Putin here or go there? Remember, you know, he hasn't gone to see Theresa May yet.
Yeah, I mean,
they've interacted, but...
Yeah, but Theresa, what is the motive for his relationship with Putin, this very close relationship? That's what I keep coming back to.
The thing is, at this point, do we deserve to know what that motive is when we went ahead and elected a person who wouldn't disclose his income taxes, and we elected a person who was anything but forthright?
Tongue is certainly in your cheek this morning, David.
Absolutely. I think what's even more offensive is the fact that you have, you know, the only body in our, you know, democratic society that could hold him accountable and force him to answer, that being Congress. We have a silent Congress. Everyone is mum on this issue. I mean, it's extraordinary.
It is stunning.
And you mentioned, McCain. You know, what's happened in England. You know, these are our NATO partners. That's the reason why it's the national security that is advising him, not only advising him in caps. Right?
Interfered with our elections and used chemical weapons.
Against a NATO ally.
And one of the U.S. closest allies on the streets of London. And, you know, Malcolm talked the other day about how dangerous the chemical weapons that they used to try to kill this Russian in London was. Russians use chemical weapons on the streets of London.
It's the Manchurian
interfered
candidate.
Interfered with our elections.
But doesn't he have to validate Vladimir's election in order for his election to also be validated.
That's a good point.
And the thing is, you don't know. You don't. The problem with not having seen his tax returns is you don't know what his economic interest is, and you don't know if this is to distract because there's so many other bad things going on. So certainly this is a distraction. But you step back and think about the other thing that happened yesterday. Is he met with the Emir of Saudi Arabia, right? Mm-hmm. And so at the same time on the Senate floor, there was a bipartisan debate about not funding the war in Yemen, yep. Right? You have Trump talking about increasing the military aid and military package and allowing them to buy more munitions, the Saudis. And so you have him working with the Russians who are bombing Syria. You have him working with the Saudis who are committing genocide in Yemen, using, you know, our tools to do that. And I think about China rising. You know, China is building schools. They're building hospitals. They're building science centers. They're building roads and bridges. And Trump, the U.S., they're blowing them up.
But they're,
you know, they're aiding and abetting blowing up those things. And so what's the long-term impact of that? How do things like Al-Qaeda fester and grow?
Exactly. But China is also using their soft power in countries that we've now considered, we've said, are S-holes.
Right.
Right?
Trade.
So,
investments.
So, but you know, you have China and African nations. They're using soft power to gain influence, right?
Absolutely.
And you have, you know, the China engaging in free trade. We walked away from trade, right?
Right.
And we have China filling in that space. And so
and climate change
and
walked
climate
away,
change.
Filling in that space because there's economic opportunities in that space.
Right, but I think they're exercising, you know, the better, for lack of, for more simpler terms, just the feel-good way of gaining power versus, you know, what we're doing is the bullying way. And again, we don't have a government that's standing up and asking the hard questions and holding, you know, folks accountable in any other situation, and whether it be a business, a steering committee, a board of trustees, you'd have what is called a no confidence vote at this point with this much negligence. But again, there's no system that exists
to occur. And they and the Republicans in Congress will not do it with the upcoming midterms. They just will not do it.
And also,
so then the question becomes, David, if in fact the midterms are a wipeout for them, and there's a big piece in the paper yesterday about projections that the Democrats will certainly take the House and may well take the Senate, if that happens, do these people then develop a set of institutional cojones?
I think once the elections are over, you're going to see the size of those cojones, whether they're... I don't think we can see them now, but...
Institutional size now.
Oh, boy.
But also, Friday, March 23rd, the deadline for the budget. Mm. One of the things that all of this distraction has allowed is for McConnell and Ryan and those folks to negotiate a budget under, you know, there's no national conversation about what is or isn't in the budget because it's all about, you know, what Trump did or didn't say to Putin and Stormy Daniels and Mueller.
The same thing.
And so a $1.3 trillion budget, perhaps it was introduced this morning. I know as of 2 o'clock this morning, they were supposed to post it Sunday night, mm-hmm. Monday. They hadn't as midnight last night to meet. It needed to be posted, you know, but they still didn't have a resolution. So what's in this $1.3 trillion budget? Is there a DACA fix? Is there a wall?
No.
And is there, probably not. None of that stuff.
There won't be agreement. I mean, there is proposals for a DACA fix. And there's also, you know, the desire to, you know, build that wall. So
right.
he's looking for funding.
But Ryan and McConnell, you know, they're getting their judges, they're filling up the judge slots without any attention. Given, you know, they're doing all of their, making the changes they want to change, healthcare, whatever,
and again,
without any debate or attention.
It's
because
extremely problematic. I mean, you know, whether or not, as David was saying before, you know, do we deserve to know this information? I think, you know, on the tenets of this country and democracy, we do deserve to know what's in that budget. We do deserve to know what's at stake, whether that has to do with tax records or that has to do with business ties, because this is the person leading our country. This is what influences is being used and possibly abused when making decisions.
We're fiscal hawks and we're patriots only when there is a Democrat in the presidency.
But why is that?
Well, you'd have to ask them.
Exactly.
You'd have to ask the Republicans in the House and the Senate.
Also, Alan, do you think that Donald Trump really understands the broad implications of what he's saying to Putin? I don't know that he really has a depth of understanding about the world.
I think he's scared to death of Putin. That's what I think.
And I think he keeps him in good standing.
But does he understand the implications of what he's doing?
I don't think he cares. I don't think he cares about anything except himself.
No appreciation for history. He has no appreciation for anything other than bunnies, from what I can see. And you know what? I mean, what a great time.
More on that.
Hey,
more on that.
I'm just saying, man, what a great time if you're in the bunny business. If you actually sell bunnies, you've got bunnies that are taking over the headlines.
Well, it's an exciting time. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about this and much, much more. We welcome your letters. panel@wamc.org. Teresa Bourgeois is here, David Soares, Jen Smith, and Alan Chartok. And of course, it just isn't a party without your letters. panel@wamc.org. We have a lot more to talk about. We will do that, get to your letters, and delve into other stuff right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Wednesday, the 21st of March. I know it's the 21st of March because it is Jen Smith's birthday.
Hooray!
How are you?
I had heard from an individual person also who wrote me and said, don't embarrass her if she doesn't want to hear about her birthday.
I am not embarrassed.
Get out the banjo. Play happy birthday.
I enjoy my birthday.
We love our Jen.
How do you celebrate in the Berkshires? what are your fine traditions
we
in the Berkshires?
Such an Albany
center question. Maple syrup and.
Well, you go to the friendly or something like that.
You get an ice cream.
The one where I live got shut down.
Yeah, they're all shut down.
Oh, no.
Well, happy birthday. We thank you for spending it with us.
Thank you.
Hopefully we
very exciting
make it a little
birthday.
Happier. I don't know that that's possible, but hopefully that's the case.
Bunnies in Russia. Can't go right.
That's right. That's bunnies in
we
Russia.
We need birthday
bumper
music. I
certainly hope those people at the Berkshire Eagle will raise your pay in honor of your birthday.
All right. On that
I
note,
would have brought a cupcake or something.
While they sharpen their pencils and figure out how to do that, Alan's going to write a few letters.
Okay, Joe. Question for David Soares. President Trump's call for the death penalty federal for drug dealers. While this is completely unrealistic and won't happen since he said under current law, could it embolden DAs to seek the death penalty for low-level drug dealers, such as people who are not really dealers, but just sell to maintain their own habits? Allison in Carmel.
I definitely think that the danger there is, for example, you wouldn't have to fear a prosecutor in, you know, either the state of New York, either in the federal system or in the local system, ever trying something like that. But if you're in a deep red state, and something like this were in fact to pass, yeah, I'd be worried about that.
I mean, do we have even the capacity to do that, though, with the number of people who are on death row now?
Never put it past the opportunistic prosecutors who will look to make a name for themselves, and they would use cases like this to make a name for themselves. And this is dangerous, dangerous, dangerous conversations and talk. If you wanted to talk about, you know, how do we prevent and destroy illicit markets, well, you know, isn't it interesting that those illicit markets happen to take a stronger foothold in communities that are suffering from poverty?
Absolutely.
You know, you don't have 12-year-olds that decide, I think I'm going to just be a drug dealer. You know, they're doing it because they don't have, you know, options. And so if the president wanted to take a great leadership role, he could provide more funding on the demand side, but he can also do more to attack the supply side by establishing, you know, a job, you know, in a work development program that targets those places that are the highest.
And threatening to cut off communities that don't abide is absolutely not the solution either. You know, that creates more discrimination and widens that gap of public health.
This is a person who has no understanding. He's a strong man and thinks that he can do everything by forcing people, by leveraging, you know, resources. I mean, his attack right now on the state of California, his attack through the Department of Justice on states that have legalized marijuana for recreational use, it's just absurd. With all of the information that we now have available to us, the fact that we're even having these conversations about attacking pot as a gateway drug when the greatest gateway drug in the history of mankind has been legal, you know, pharmaceutical companies, right, is just absurd. So if he's going to, you know, really go through with his threat to exercise the death penalty, if I was a CEO at Pfizer, I'd be really afraid.
Yeah, is he
well,
gonna...
that's the meme that's on social media. Which exec is first?
Yeah.
And doctors, these doctor mills, that kind of thing. What about the death penalty for the Parkland shooter? I'm just so disturbed by the fact that they're pursuing the death penalty for him. That guy is so clearly mentally ill.
So last discussion I had today, getting out of my car to walk across the street, involved, you know, what do we do with young people who have mental health issues, who are doing these things, like, for example, threatening to rain, you know, violence on their classmates. And the question becomes, well, do you have them arrested or do you have them, you know, under the release or under the supervision of probation pending, you know, mental health examinations? I mean, so for us, look at what we're dealing with, right? And these are ethical, moral choices that you're making, but they're also political choices, right? Mm-hmm. And so if you're a prosecutor in, like, again, a red state, and you really want to demonstrate how tough you are, well, that's when you start to talk about the death penalty and just, you know, taking off your...
Well, it's so Trump. I mean, he goes right to the evil place that exists in every human being, you know, to the dark place that exists in every human being. And he says, kill him or, right, you know, put him in jail forever or whatever. So,
or I'd punch that reporter,
yeah,
or, you know,
exactly,
like what, like a tough guy who's never thrown a punch in his life.
But tap into people's fears instead of their hopes. Mm-hmm. I mean, we went from President Obama, who tapped into people's hopes, to Trump, who really, and you see that with Cambridge Analytica. That's what that's all about, tapping into people's fears.
Sure. Mm-hmm. And we've had about 1,100 letters, one from Matt saying the chemical weapon attack in Skripal was in Salisbury, not London.
Mea culpa. I'm sorry. I should have said Great Britain. Sorry.
See, we're accountable here on the round.
We are. Sure. Thank you very much for all of your letters. I'm sorry I said the wrong city.
And as an English friend would say to me, as you were.
Mary says, Putin's win. Good morning, panel. Does anyone else think it was odd that Trump referred to Putin's win as an electoral win?
Yeah, was weird.
Russia doesn't have an electoral college, does it? Was this a slip of the tongue referring to his own electoral win? Nah.
We assume he yeah, has greater knowledge and understanding of the world than he does.
Yeah, I think he's just used to saying electoral win, and that's what he said.
This is the being there president, you know? It's just, watch the movie.
We're all Chauncey Gardner. Go ahead.
Right. Like to watch. Martin says, phone call. Is it any surprise that so few Republicans have spoken out against Trump's support of the Putin, quote, election? They do everything they can to create sham elections here. Putin is their model of success. Let's stop pretending the GOP does not care about democracy anywhere. And then from Nurse Lapani. Hi, panelists. Anyone attending an elementary conference on how to supervise people is told, don't tell people what not to do. Tell them what you want them to do. Subconsciously, they will remember the phrase, but not necessarily remember the do not part. Carol.
I'm sorry. If you're president of the United States of America, you shouldn't have to rely on notes to know that you do not congratulate the person who disrupted your elections, who led the effort to disrupt your elections.
Right, you are.
Merkel did that. You know, Macron did that. They made their diplomatic phone calls, but they didn't use that term, congratulate.
Right. This should not have required a tutorial.
Good Bourgeois, for you, buddy.
Ms. Bourgeois said that this man shouldn't have to rely on notes to know those things. And I would remind Ms. Bourgeois that this is the man who had students that were part of an awful, awful, horrific, violent act in a room with him. And he had to have notes in order to express empathy to those students. So this is a man who must have notes just to remind him how to be human.
Well, we'll pause there and reflect on that. All right.
Happy spring.
Happy spring. Happy birthday to Jen. It's all good. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll move on to some other subjects. We'll let David finish his apple. It'll all be good. We'll be back right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us on this Wednesday morning. We should note that the top story of the day, of course, is that the suspect in the Texas bombings blew himself up, according to police. A suspect in the series of bombings that have terrorized the city of Austin, Texas, died early this morning, blowing himself up in his vehicle as officers closed in on him. The suspect was a 24-year-old male, according to the Austin police chief, who did not name him. Officials did not rule out the possibility that the man had accomplices. As of us going on the air here at 9 o'clock, police were still telling people to be very safe and cautious because they didn't know if there were more active bombs out there. But I guess, David, you think of how this, something like this just rattles an entire community and then extrapolates it to, my God, what if something like that happened?
I thought they did a fantastic job. I thought that community did a fantastic job rallying around law enforcement, cooperating with law enforcement. I think that some of the things that the public may not be aware is just the number of people who are hunkered down in very, small spaces, following up on leads and, getting information in real time and putting that information into work. Mm-hmm. It doesn't happen unless you have a community that is aware and phoning in, providing information. And it doesn't happen unless you have very intelligent people taking in vast amounts of information and then being able to act on that information. And the fact of the matter is when you think about how long this person was out there and the speed with which he was apprehended, so to speak, and ultimately what has transpired, my hats are off to the law enforcement community, but my hats are also off to the vigilance of the citizens in that community that helped, bring an end to this.
Well, you wonder, too, if whether state authorities or even federal authorities would lend extra support at that time. I was wondering about, do you get emergency funding to respond to, thousands of phone calls with the public being hyper aware? Again, the volume of leads, false alarms, but ultimately needed some following up on to be sure.
In situations like that, you have the FBI that will come on in. And when I say come on in, they don't usually just come in and move other people out of the room. They come in and provide assistance to local law enforcement. You have the ATF that will come in. And you also have the law enforcement arm of the U.S. Postal Services, as well as a number of other agencies that just come in. You're the one with a pot of coffee, and they defer, really to you. But that lead desk is set up, and there's a large volume of information coming in. You've got great people mm-hmm. who know how to, take that information in to dismiss certain leads, mm-hmm. And others who put that information into work.
You think it's six bombs, killed two people, five injured. Those numbers are remarkably low considering what you're dealing with.
I keep thinking about Austin. Our boy John has spent a lot of time in Austin. He was there for several years, and we used to visit him all the time. It's a relatively small town. It really is. It's state capital, but it's no New York City or Dallas or the rest of it. And it is a bright beacon in liberalism, in for all intents and purposes, Texas, which is not. So it's very blue it is bluish anyway, and an intellectual class because of the university and everything else that exists in Austin. So I keep trying to put into my head, what could it be that has set this guy off? We're going to find out, of course, but what
we hope.
Well, I mean, the first explosions hit an African-American community, so there was concern that it was that it was race related. The police chief this morning said that they still have no motive. They don't know. And hopefully, as you said, Jen, hopefully they do find out.
Well, and those two. Sorry.
Oh, I was just going to say, but it's concerning as these incidents happen. You know, I was just checking into the latest updates on the Las Vegas case, and we have thousands of pieces of evidence, but we still don't know what motivated that attack that, you know, killed 53 people and injured 800. And so with these cases, and going back to even Florida, I think you would almost want to keep the suspect around to find out more information, to understand motives of why these are happening. And at the same time, going back to just looking at all these cases, I mean, across the country with the school shootings, we know very well in our own region the lockdowns. Just in Cohoes the other day, there was a lockdown because of threats with school shootings, bomb threats being posted on bathroom stalls. And, you know, it definitely sets up a series of alert levels and stuff. But can local law enforcement handle this increased volume, and how long will it be sustained as we have a considerably higher amount of incidence rates? And you mentioned the FBI, but with the federal cuts to the FBI, are their resources limited to help out these communities?
Well, you know, it's interesting that you say that, because I think in, like, Albany County has experienced a decline in crime, you know, over the course of the last 15 years. And there's a temptation there on the part of local leaders to slash, you know, the budgets of the public safety budgets. But it's the training. It's the things that are being done when there's very low crime that prepares members of the law enforcement community to go out and to be effective when you do have these incidents.
Well, let's face it. You got another problem here, David Soares, and that is that the state legislature is obviously patrolled by you. I mean, if a crime is going to be committed, it often comes back to Albany. So what they do is they keep you starving. We know that you should have more staff. I don't think you're going to say anything about this. But in fact, we all know the way that it's always been is if you have the local DA in charge of crime in the state legislature, don't give him any resources, and then, you know, he won't find you.
And then the other issue is the disproportionality between the crimes that do impact on state legislatures and the amount of resources that you put into to the investigation and prosecuting them. For
example,
you know, you could put in 6 months or a year into an investigation and arrive at an E-level felony, where, you know, someone who's an average citizen who's engaged in similar conduct, it's much more significant.
Go to jail for 20 years
for their crimes. But the interesting thing that you said about Las Vegas and some of these other incidents, you know, if you have an individual who's engaged in these behaviors, and they're social people and they have friends, there's a lot that you can learn from the people who knew them. But when you have these loner types, the only thing that you're left with to discover anything about them is what they leave behind, in the form of, you know, where they venture into on the internet, what kind of, you know, messages that they send to people, and what kind of messages that they're receiving. And so sometimes, like in the case of you know, the incident and the shooter in Las Vegas, it's going to take some time to delve in and go through all of those things in order to find out. And I'm not suggesting this is the case with Las Vegas, but sometimes when that threat has passed, there's not that incentive, unless you're talking to a member of the media that wants to continue digging. But as far as law enforcement is concerned, there's really very little incentive to continue to delve in and to try to uncover those things, because guess what? There's a new case on your desk, you know, the following
morning. And the issue really is not so much what motivated him, but what enabled him. What did he have access to? Which gets to the gun issue, which you think about in advance of, you know, this Saturday there's another major march in Washington on gun safety. And what have been the repercussions about the, you know, he was allowed access to high-powered guns and weapons, high-powered ammunition. Should he have? And we haven't had that public discussion. And that we know the facts on. You know, we don't know what motivated him, but we know what access he had to what kind of weapons.
And there's the history of documentation, too. You know, if you look at the ages of people who are calling in threats right now, they're in their teens. Then we have, you know, the case in Austin. We have the case in Parkland.
24-year-old white male.
Where they're 20s. But what happens between 15 and 20? Can we follow? And again, because it's not studied by the CDC or other agencies to look at data, we don't really have that information. I think there's a lack of information. You know, us, I hear we've been holding forums in the Berkshires about gun violence, and there have been a lot of talk about school adjustment counselors. There needs to be more of those to handle those caseloads. But then again, you could gather all the information you want between K-12, but when someone leaves 12th grade, where does that information go? How is it used? You know, how do we keep track of a person's well-being and what they, and again, with, you can get into the legal side of it, minor information, what your juvenile court record looks like, and
well,
then
those are the issues that were of concern to prosecutors when we were addressing the issue of raise the age, and you know, look, there's a lot of you know, well-intended people who want the best, and they want, you know, reform in our criminal justice system, and I think prosecutors want the same thing. However, there are those, you know, collateral consequences, unforeseen consequences that much like you're saying, you know, if the family court, everything that happens in family court, you know, once an individual, you know, it used to be 14, 15, but once an individual, you know, as an adult, that stuff is sealed and there's no access to that for us. But there's got to be a means by which that information is available in the event that this person comes on the radar.
I agree.
But you have the Parkland shooter, and you alluded to this earlier in general, is that that person was crying out for help. He needed help. People in the system knew he had needed help, but they didn't have whatever was the mechanisms, the methods, the opportunities to get him the help that he needed.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that there are people like that, maybe not as ill as he was, but all over the country. I know my mother was a teacher, and they had these problems, you know, in the past where they knew somebody needed help, but how could they get them the help that everybody knew that they needed?
I want to do a little bit of a switcheroo if I can. David, we're so lucky to have you here. I wanted to ask you a question about something that's going on in Berkshire County right now, and that is the longtime DA is retiring. And they pulled a switcheroo, a fast one, in which they've appointed the assistant, and the DA has resigned in order to get the assistant in there. How important are elections for DAs?
Well, they're very important because, you know, look, prosecutors have to reflect, you know, the priorities of the communities that they serve. And it's easy if you're a prosecutor who's been in office for a very long time to become lost and isolated and become lost in process. And so, you know, you may think that you're doing all of the things because you've been doing them for the last 20 years. But guess what? 20 years, I mean, times change. And if you're not taking the time to avail yourself to community forums and to understand where people are, the attitudes around, you know, marijuana use may change. I know I've seen, you know, a change in that, in those attitudes. It's become legal since, you know, I took office. And so you have to, you know, take inventory of your policies and see where your community is and then make those kind of adjustments. Those opportunities may be lost if, in fact, you know, you're handing over the reins and you're maintaining, you know, you're trying to preserve the institution as opposed to, you know, listening to your community.
In my mind, no doubt about what you've just said being true. And I find it very discouraging. There is a new candidate, Andrea Harrington, over in who is going to take on the establishment. She may not win, but God bless her for saying, "Okay, people deserve a choice."
Mm-hmm. And I think that that's something that's owed to the community in terms of democracy, transparency, and you know, how public officials come to office as more people challenge this matter. And I think that's something that the governor's office needs to pay attention to, too, because that was an appointment that was approved by Baker's office. And so hopefully those parties are.
Well, it'll be interesting. I mean, not that I'm aware of what's happening in your your community, but it's interesting to whether or not that was done as a result of maintaining continuity because of the cases that you have already that are in full swing. You know, they've been commenced. They're you've got trials that are being scheduled, or whether that was done as a political move to make sure that the district attorney's office does not leave the,
It's the second.
Okay. All right. We're with that said, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we will continue. We have many other topics to discuss. Stay tuned now for Ray Graff with news right after this break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Jen Smith, David Soares, and Teresa Bourgeois. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. I want to get to the letters. We'll do that. I just want to say that when we're done with the letters, we'll go to a story with the headline, Playmate, Porn Star, and Reality TV Contestant in Court Over Trump. How could you beat that?
It's a day of bunnies, Playboy bunnies, you know, Marlon Bundo the bunny.
All right. We'll get to the bunny story as well. Alan, go ahead with letters, please.
Okay, here's one I disagree with.
You disagree.
Yeah. Dylan says, Putin justified. I would love to be able to scorn Russia invading sovereign nations, killing innocent civilians, but unfortunately, we do not own such a high moral ground. Yeah, we're a democracy with lofty ideals, but we take the same exact actions in pursuit of national interests. Dylan from the United States of America. Wait, Dylan, wait. Two wrongs do not make a right, even if you're right.
Dylan, I guess, is against spreading democracy all over the world.
Well, Richard says, Fox News analyst quits.
Yes.
I was hoping you would discuss Lieutenant Colonel Ralph Peters this morning, or in the near future. I consider Fox Network a co-conspiracy along with our president to undermine democracy in the U.S. The propaganda they spread feeds Trump's base and is rarely called out for what it really is. It's not Fox News. It's Fox propaganda. Every progressive American should watch Fox Weekly just to see how twisted their coverage is. Mr. Peters' explanation for leaving Fox is quite illuminating. Alan, didn't you say when conservatives start to bail, the end is near? Still hopeful for my grandchildren, says Richard.
This is the Fox commentator who said that he was, as the letter indicates, a retired U.S. Army lieutenant colonel. He was a Fox News commentator for quite a bit. He said that the network had become was a propaganda machine and has denigrated from providing a legitimate and much-needed outlet for conservative voices to a mere propaganda machine for a destructive and ethically ruinous administration. Over my decade with Fox, I was long proud of the association. Now I am ashamed.
Mm. You think it'll switch to MSNBC?
Well, you know, it is interesting because I do remember Fox taking, you know, slight, they bent towards a more conservative voice, even when, you know, they sort of tried and struggled to make the facts fit their agenda. But they've gone completely over the cliff, completely over the cliff, where they don't even show, you know, news that's detrimental to the president.
That's the thing. You know, if you go to their homepage for their website, I mean, there is nothing. You could compare headlines from other agencies, and there's just really important news that as a consumer I can't find there, and that's disturbing.
But we are, of course, seeing some divergence within the conservative movement, so that there are a lot of conservatives who do not like what this president is doing, for example, with trade and tariffs. And they're saying so, and then you see people showing up on CNN, some conservative commentators who are really taking an axe to, as Crystal, taking an axe to the president. So, I think part of their problem in doubling down may be that they see this thing coming apart.
But it is interesting that,
Oh, go ahead.
That first of all, he's hired a lot of, Trump has hired a number of people from Fox News, a spokesperson at the State Department, lots of others. And I've been watching Fox a lot in the last 2 weeks because I'm really trying to understand what's going on in the world. And if you watch Fox and if you watch MSNBC, it's two different worlds.
Yep.
And that's a problem for our country. It's two completely different worlds.
Well, is it possible, Teresa, that one is right and one is wrong?
No.
I think they're both.
If you want to understand this 30% or why people still stick with them, people who watch Fox, I'll go back and quote President Barack Obama. He said, if all I watched is Fox, I wouldn't like me either, right? Mm-hmm. And it is just astounding how
I don't think it's surprising. I mean, first of all, if you're talking about a news agency, they do nothing without really, you know, testing and testing and testing and getting a lot of evaluations and polling, right, to see what news is important and what's, you know, what is keeping their audience's interest. And so I think when you saw President Trump, you know, actually obtain that office, you saw a lot of the ratings, you know, they started to lose their ratings and NBC started to gain those ratings. And so
And you attributed that to what?
I attribute that to people who really dislike this president shifting over to MSNBC and other networks like CNN and watching the news. And what is Fox left to do but to continue
double down and
working on that same audience that the president continues to double down on?
But a lot of people, including, you know, some in the administration, say that the way they get their messages to him is through Fox and Friends. You know, that's how they try to reach him now because that's what he watches. That's scary.
I think it's a bigger issue for sure, and I really hope, Rex Smith, if you're listening out there, bring it on to the media project because it's not balanced at all anymore. And I think to hear a conservative voice, you do kind of have to go to Fox News, and to hear liberal voices, you have to go to somewhere else. There's no place where I have problems as a journalist and as just a general news consumer finding that well-rounded representation.
PBS
on a show.
I'm
a big fan of PBS NewsHour and other foreign sources.
Not to mention the fact that the BBC.
I love the BBC.
I mean,
Al Jazeera.
One thing, if you say it's a conservative journalist, but Steve Doocy, for God's sakes, good lord.
These aren't journalists.
Now I'm telling you, if you want to go back into the archives, go Google a show called Steve Doocy's House Party. It was on NBC. Barry Sand produced it, and it was a talk show host, and he was a comedian. And well, I guess he still is, but who knows?
Well, see, I take a very different view than the rest of you. You're all calling for equivalency and balance. I'm saying Fox is a very bad place. And they do very loaded news. And why should I want to watch them so that I can see what the loaded side is all about? I don't get that, Teresa.
Because if you're trying to understand what's going on in the world and why what's going on in these rallies, where I listen to Donald Trump and he frightens me, and I just the policies, these administration's policies, but yet you see all these people at the rallies and you see the polls. Look at Fox News. And if people just watch Fox News, they have a whole different view. Because in Fox News, they're still talking about locking up Hillary Clinton. And they're denigrating the FBI and they're denigrating Bob Mueller. And, you know, I talked to somebody the other day who's a big Trump fan. And they, you know, well, CNN, it's all lies on CNN. It's just all lies. And this person believes everything on CNN's a lie. Why? Because if you watch Fox News, that's what they say all the time. It's not true. It's a lie. And you have a president saying that the FBI lies. And you know,
okay, so what do you come away from, Teresa, when you say that? You watch Fox News to see what the other side is saying.
You inform yourself as to what the daily talking points are on the other side.
You become a better consumer. Let's take it. I mean, you've worked in a college. You've taught journalism. Wouldn't you want your students to be aware that there are multiple sources out there and that this is how messages
By the way, we're not saying we like it.
Yeah.
We're just saying
you have to understand.
I understand it fine. They're telling a lot of lies.
What? To me, there's a distinction. If you want a conservative view, which I always seek a conservative view, I'll read George Will, right? Or Brooks. I will look for the conservative view. My problem with Fox is when you're watching Fox,
and they have the exact same talking point that you see a member of Congress, you know, when they're being interviewed. Mm-hmm. It's almost like everyone's coming in the same morning briefing.
Propaganda.
Well, it is
propaganda.
Okay, this is how we're going to talk about this and this. And you're seeing it repeated over and over. You're like, this is not what your news media is supposed to be about. They're not supposed to be parroting the same talking points. They're not supposed to be developing talking points for the president of the United States.
Right. It's not news. But we do have a fundamental problem in this country about our democracy between that and Facebook, you know, the issues which I'm sure we'll talk about Facebook.
Mm-hmm. Let me get to some letters and then we'll go to that.
Here we go.
Jennifer, distraction healthcare. The House government funding bill does not include Obamacare payments aimed at lowering premiums, payments which reimburse insurers for discounts to low-income enrollees, as well as to help protect insurers from the high cost of insuring the very sick. And that's from thehill.com. That comes from thehill.com.
Yeah, I've been waiting to see what's in the final bill package, which apparently is going to be released this morning, and that's a big worry. It's what I've been trying to say in the last week or so. The deep cuts in health care that are potentially tucked in this big bill. Cuts in health center funding. Anyway.
Gail says, Putin, Trump, you may be reading too much into Trump's motivation in regard to his congratulatory call to Putin. I think he's still trying to build that Trump Tower in Moscow, and this is a way of giving his son some help. It's just that simple. I don't think so. I think Putin's got him, and I think Putin and he made his deals. That's what I think. I can't prove it, and that's what I'm hoping that the special counsel will do. Can we assume, says Keith, that Trump lied on his tax returns? Theresa made a point that we have not seen Trump's taxes. Can we assume that his taxes are full of lies? He, quote, claims that he's under audit, but he won't even release the letter from the IRS informing him that he's under audit. He's the same man who the Washington Post has said lied over 2,500 times since taking office. Thanks to Paul Ryan and the GOP, lying on your taxes is a much larger problem than being president and lying to the American public. And that's from Keith. Peter says, Mueller investigation. Before the election, Trump said it was rigged. That's because he expected to lose. So that would be his reason why. He's now disparaging Mueller and the FBI. That's for the same reason, that when they bring charges, their impartiality will be the reason why. He doesn't have to fire Mueller for this to work. And that's from Peter in New Paltz. And Russ says, perhaps the greatest threat faced by our democracy is the 15th year of the deficit-fueled wartime budgeting. The refusal of Congress to fund the federal government despite the steady rise in interest rates has put steady pressure on the value of the dollar, and will eventually blow out the American experiment as debts have brought down the empires throughout history. And that's from Russ.
It'll be interesting if Senator Paul filibusters the budget agreement this weekend because of the deficits.
He has to, right? I mean, to be consistent.
Steven says, Trump and Putin. Does anyone have blinders on? Putin drops his bombs in Syria, and the U.S. does the same in Afghanistan and many other places. Both governments are culpable and corrupt. Claire says, shooters. Always investigate school bullying before jumping to other mental health issues. Oh, it says tip. Always investigate school bullying before jumping to other mental health issues. And that's clear, Claire. And Lisa says, good morning and thank you, panel. Yesterday, the Congressional Black Caucus asked that the Austin bombing be declared a terrorist incident. Had that happened, how would that have affected the investigation? And now that you're mentioning that, I'm sure you all saw Betsy DeVos facing questions yesterday, in which other sterling things came out of her mouth, like, well, a black congresswoman was saying, you don't care about black children. You don't care about our children. And said, have you ever gone into an undersourced school? And she had the nerve to say, I don't know that they'd let me in. Can you imagine? Secretary of Education.
I mean, that's...
The sad thing is, with every one of these characters, is they are doing such incredible harm to our country. But on the other hand, these are the most entertaining human beings that you can ever find. I mean, I would rather sit and listen to a DeVos interview than watch anything on TV.
I love you, David.
It was horrifying, her testimony. And again, I know broken record, but What's in this budget bill having to do with education? They were questioning her. Was she, in fact, trying to shift $1 billion from public school funding into private school funding?
Yep.
And did she, in fact, propose to cut all of these programs? And she totally ducked the question. Is she, in fact, dismantling the Civil Rights Division in the Education Department? She ducked the question.
They're all doing it. But every single one of these, you know, agency heads, that's what they're doing. They're dismantling, you know, those agencies that took, you know, decades and decades to build.
And Speaker Ryan and Mitch McConnell in the Senate are complicit in this, and they're doing this under cover of Trump's barrage of all of this stuff about himself instead of the country. We should be having policy discussions. I know I'm wonky, but you know, do we really want to shift $1 billion out of funding for public schools to improve it for all of kids so that we can move it into private schools so that one kid can transfer? She keeps talking about the one kid who could be able to transfer. Well, why doesn't somebody say, well, what about fixing the schools that don't work?
All right, we have one more letter.
One letter. Okay, Alan, I think this is a hoozy. Poetry, you'd have to know it. Poetry.
National Poetry Day today. Poetry Day.
Alan, quote, know thy enemy, parenthesis, someone. That's what you should. Why you should watch Fox News. Oh, no, that's why you should watch Faux News. That said, I can't stand to watch it myself, but it's a valid philosophy, and that's from Barry the Bassist.
All right. a lot going on in that letter, wasn't there? So we only have a few moments, and I certainly don't want to deprive David of the bunny story. God knows, I don't want to deprive myself of Marlon Bundo. So the vice president's daughter and wife put together a children's book about Marlon Bundo, who is their bunny, right?
Cute bunny.
And so they put out this children's book, and I guess it was to come out yesterday. And it's a little story about a day in the life of the vice president through the eyes of Marlon Bundo, the little bunny. Okay. So John Oliver, the wonderful comedian who is Last Week Tonight on HBO, Last Week Tonight with John Oliver, decided, we could have fun with this, and has a new book out that came out on the same day, which we should note is doing much better in sales, number one on the New York Times bestseller list, A Day in the Life of Marlon Bundo, in which it is... it's a gay romance for children. Now, before you laugh and think that it's a parody, it's actually a beautiful story about a bunny who falls in love with another little boy bunny.
And all the money's going to wonderful causes.
That's right. And so A Day in the Life of Marlon Bundo, and they have a very similar style in the illustration. The book is written beautifully, and it is... Well, it's hilarious, isn't it?
it's amazing how he managed in a show to weaponize, you know, first of all, comedy, right? He weaponizes comedy, but he took on a very important issue, right? Mm-hmm. And one that stands in direct contrast to the Vice President of the United States. Mm-hmm. And here it is outpacing not only the Vice President's book, but James Comey's book, it is number one with a bullet on Amazon.
It's the money goes to the Trevor Project, a charity for LGBT youth. And
then I loved Charlotte Pence's, she's the daughter who wrote it, though, her statement about just what she thought of the whole thing. She's like, you know what? These books are both making money for good causes. I think it's flattering that, you know, this parody. And it was actually another woman who wrote the story for the Oliver book, too.
Yes.
And, you know, I think it's great that it's just something that's in good humor, but drives it home a good point, too. And I think, obviously, by the climbing on the bestseller list, that people are buying into it.
Oh, yeah.
And let's be clear, there's nothing wrong with the Vice President's bunny book. It's a lovely bunny book that talks about, you know.
I would buy both, maybe.
Yeah. So
I think Marlon Bundo must be rolling over in his grave.
I think the bunny's still alive.
Yeah,
right?
The bunny's still with us.
talking about Marlon
Brando. Well, he is, but the Marlon Bundo is
alive and well.
A very
the
cute little bunny.
House.
Yeah,
he's cute.
A press conference.
I think he's living at our house.
All right. Well,
the vice president himself. Now that's a whole other. Totally complicit in all of this. And
we're out of time. I'm sorry, but you'll be back tomorrow. You can say what you have to say tomorrow. All right.
Sure, I'll come back.
Excellent. My thanks to everybody.
Happy birthday to Jen.
Jen, have a great birthday. Thank you very much. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.